Thank you, Your
Thank
Honor.
you.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the state of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you and good morning to everyone. We greatly appreciate your participating using technological skills that at least some of us do not used to have. We will conduct today's arguments just like we would if you were in the courtroom. You have assigned time. I believe all of today's cases are 10 minutes per side. And we will, the judges will be asking questions during those 10 minutes, just as if you were in the courtroom. The first case of the day is Nolasco versus Malcolm. I hope I pronounced those names right, and I apologize if I did not. Before we begin, do we have questions from any of the attorneys about the process today? I am not hearing any questions or seeing anybody waving their hand, so I think then we will proceed. Mr. McKean, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Members of the court, looks like I won the ugly headphone contest, but so my name is Todd McKeown. I represent the plaintiffs in both of these companion cases that have come before the court this morning. These cases are about a tragic motor vehicle accident that resulted in the death of a 12-year-old young child and her minor brother, all due to the negligence of her mother in a motor vehicle accident. To add to this tragedy, if either one of these children had a friend with them, they would have been able to make full recovery. But due to the antiquated parental immunity doctrine, these two children cannot make recovery. So it's our position that this judicially created doctrine is antiquated and should be abrogated. How do we do that? How does the court do that? Appley argues that any such abrogation should be done by clear legislation. That's not what this court did in Emig, where the court similarly abrogated the common law spousal immunity doctrine. In Emig, the court stated we would be abdicating our function were we to insist on legislation and refuse to consider old and unsatisfactory court-made rules. Heckman was decided in 2017, and I would submit to add to that that the court can fall on that case, that the court found if there is a desire or a need felt by the legislature to bring that back or amend it, reinstate it, whatever, the legislature is free to do that. We submit that that's very unlikely to happen given the legislature's repeal of the gas statute in 2010. The next thing that the court needs to do to determine whether or not to abrogate this doctrine is looking at the common law, looking at whether this common law should be abrogated under stare decisis principles. The court has looked at four factors in making this analysis. Antiquity, is the doctrine well reasoned? Reliance, interest, and workability.
Counsel, what was the reasoning of this court when the modified parental immunity doctrine was initially adopted in Nebraska? What was the reasoning that underpins our modified rule?
When it was actually modified, Your Honor?
Well, we've described it as a modified parental immunity doctrine. What is the reasoning that has always been underpinning that doctrine in Nebraska?
Well, I think discretion is the primary reason for, parental discretion is the primary reason for the doctrine in Nebraska under Pullen way back in 1959.
Has that changed any since 1959?
Well, Your Honor, we would submit it has, and that goes back to the antiquity question. That's the first analysis in the stare decisis analysis, and we submit that it has changed. First of all, it's been rejected by a majority of the states. That is very clearly laid out in the amicus brief, with a lot of statistics and where every jurisdiction falls on that. Nebraska is only
how many? I'm sorry to interrupt.
You're right.
How many of those jurisdictions today still recognize the doctrine in a modified sense, given the importance of parental discretion?
Yeah, again, that's broke down in the amicus brief. I can't give you the precise statistics on that. I apologize for that. I can tell you that Nebraska is only one of seven states that completely bars minors from suing parents in ordinary negligence. And we're the only state in the Eighth Circuit that does that.
Counsel, has Nebraska ever applied or even discussed the parental immunity doctrine outside of the context of parental decision making?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. There's you look at the Pullen case and the cases before that address it. I was unable to find a case exactly on point with this where a negligent parent caused the death or severe injuries to a child. There's been some cases similar to that. Some unpublished cases that the appellee references, but I don't see where the Nebraska has addressed this specific set of facts. Also interesting is since the repeal of the Guest statute, there are no cases that I can find that are reported on this. So I think there's some unsettling in the status of the law in Nebraska on this.
Counsel, even when we had the Guest statute on the books in Nebraska, were there any cases that addressed both the Guest statute and the parental immunity doctrine together?
Not that I could find, Your Honor, and I mentioned that in my brief. I think every one of the cases relied on the Guest statute, or they just simply weren't brought. It wasn't allowed under the Guest statute, so there just were no cases reported. Since the repeal of the Guest statute, again, no cases reported. And I think, again, as I mentioned earlier, I think that's some confusion in the law. Obviously, there's nothing in the record, but I would submit that there are companies that are paying in this scenario based upon a repeal of the Guest statute and some that simply aren't. My clients were unfortunate enough to run into a company that is not. And I think it's up to the Supreme Court to try to settle this to settle this matter today.
Well, this doctrine isn't about insurance coverage, though.
It's not about insurance coverage? I'm sorry.
You're not suggesting that we base respect to the parental immunity doctrine on the presence or absence of insurance, are you?
Yeah, all the research and data would indicate that that's a lot of what it comes down to. When you get into the reasonableness and whether the doctrine is well-reasoned, insurance is one of the factors. When you talk about the necessity of protecting family harmony or the necessity of depleting family resources, those are two of the factors in the analysis that the court's going to look at. And we would submit that in most of these jurisdictions that have trended in the direction of getting rid of this, is it actually adds to a possible pot in helping family harmony by having other assets rather than mounting medical bills that they have no way of paying for. That's one of the considerations that the legislature made in looking at this.
If we were to abrogate the parental immunity doctrine, do you have a position as to whether it should be discarded entirely or limited to or allowed to remain in place for cases where parental discretion is involved?
Your Honor, I guess I would ask the court to abrogate it completely. If the court did not and take it on a case-by-case basis, again, the NADA brief does an excellent job of laying out some different options. I would simply follow the recommendations that they make in there. From my own personal standpoint and the duty to my client, there's no question that at a minimum, it should be repealed with respect to motor vehicle accidents. If the court feels there's some necessity to allow the doctrine to stand in place to some extent where parental discretion is permitted, that would certainly be better than where we are right now compared to the rest of the nation. I would, where's the clock? I guess at this time, I see I have a couple minutes left. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless anybody else has any questions of me right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McEwen. Ms. Kano, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Kano, and I represent the appellee, the estate of Katarina Nolasco. The district court granted the motion of summary judgment of my client based on the doctrine of parental immunity, and the court should affirm. Parental immunity has long been recognized as a fundamental tenet of Nebraska law. Nebraska has adopted a broad, robust parental immunity doctrine with only a single exception, cruel or inhumane treatment. And the value of this broad, clear doctrine is that it's the best way to protect the important interests that do underline the parental immunity doctrine. And those are avoiding interference in the familial relationship, promotion of familial harmony, and protection of familial assets. The clear, broad doctrine maximizes these interests, and under principles of stare decisis, the court should continue to apply this doctrine. The first stare decisis.
I'm sorry to interrupt, counsel, but you've mentioned several underpinning principles. Have the courts in Nebraska adhered to any of those underpinnings in application or discussion of the modified parental immunity doctrine in Nebraska?
Your Honor, I think that the doctrine as it was applied in the Pullen case, I think certainly has to be based on a recognition of those principles. Those are certainly the principles that were discussed in the case law that was available at the time that the doctrine was adopted in Nebraska. I don't think that Pullen itself has a very robust discussion of those principles or of any specific principles, but I think that it's a fair inference that the reason why Nebraska adopted this broad, robust parental immunity doctrine is based on the case law that was available at the time, and those are the principles that animated the cases that the Pullen court was looking to in adopting this broad parental immunity doctrine that has since been applied by courts around Nebraska. And those principles
with regard to motor vehicle accidents, it appears Nebraska had codified the parental immunity doctrine in those situations. What does the repeal of that codification mean to the application of parental immunity doctrine in motor vehicle accidents?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't believe that the Guest statute amounts to a codification of the parental immunity doctrine. I think that the Guest statute had a different scope. It was addressing a broader class of individuals as to a very specific kind of claim, which was a motor vehicle claim. The parental immunity doctrine is a broader doctrine that covered a narrow class of people based on different considerations, but for a broader class of claims. And so I think that in repealing the Guest statute, the principles of the parental immunity doctrine, which are grounded specifically in the parent-child relationship, were unaffected by the Guest statute.
Is there anything in the public policy in connection with the repeal of the statute that informs the underlying policy behind the parental immunity statute outside of that Guest statute? What's the public policy pronouncement in recent times from the legislature?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the legislature has spoken to the question of parental immunity. Our position is that the legislature speaks through enacted laws, and that's how the legislature's influence comes on policy. States around the country have absolutely addressed the parental immunity doctrine legislatively. We cited to a number of cases in our brief where legislatures around the country have either eliminated or narrowed the parental immunity doctrine. There are lots of models for how to do that, but the Nebraska legislature has not done so. And so in our position would be that the fact that those models are out there and that the Nebraska legislature has not acted indicates that it remains the policy of this state to protect the parent-child relationship, to avoid interference in that parent-child relationship. And I don't think that it's a fair inference that in addressing this narrow class of cases about the guest statute, which applies not just to parents and children, but to all kinds of familial relationships in a very narrow class of cases, that the legislature meant to do anything to undermine the doctrine of parental immunity.
If we were to abrogate the doctrine of parental immunity with respect to automobile accidents, how would that impact any of the interests you've identified as animating the need for the doctrine?
Your Honor, I think there's several reasons that a carve out for automobile accident cases would impact those interests. The first is that one of the interests implicated by the parental immunity doctrine is the protection of familial harmony. And although a typical automobile accident isn't going to implicate parental discretion necessarily, it will implicate familial harmony. The response by appellee to that, or I'm sorry, to the appellant by that, is that there are going to be, in some class of cases, some insurance proceeds available. But that really doesn't eliminate the problem of the familial conflict, both because of the inherently adversarial nature of a lawsuit, and in addition to the fact that the potential exposure in a case is not going to be coextensive with insurance proceeds. But I think there's a more fundamental problem, which is that the availability of insurance proceeds doesn't determine the availability of a tort remedy under Nebraska law. And so to eliminate or to ignore the effect that a lawsuit is going to have on familial harmony based on some assumption that there may be insurance proceeds available is really putting the cart before the horse and is interjecting insurance into tort law in a way that is I believe, inconsistent with Nebraska law. And then our final position is that,
Was family harmony one of the reasons for the interspousal tort immunity?
Your Honor, it was one of the recognized reasons for the change in the law regarding the interspousal immunity doctrine. But I'd submit that what animated the repeal of the interspousal immunity doctrine were fundamental changes in the nature of the understanding of the marital relationship. There had been changes there have been statutes enacted like the Married Women's Property Act. There were fundamental societal changes in the understanding of the marital relationship that animated this court's decision to repeal the spousal immunity doctrine. But there haven't been those corresponding changes with regard to the parent-child relationship. The same principles that animated our understanding of the parental child relationship that led to the adoption of the parental immunity doctrine are in place today.
And you believe that's not impacted by whatever it is we may have learned from the repeal of the guest statute?
Your Honor, I think there are a couple of things to say about that. And one is that, again, I don't think that the guest statute really has had any impact because the parental immunity doctrine has been an independent doctrine, so the bar has remained in place. But the second part of that would be that I think that if there's to be some determination of how what we've learned from the guest statute might counsel in favor of some kind of modification of the parental immunity doctrine, that's the kind of determination that can and should be made by the legislature. When arguments have been advanced in other states, such as Colorado, such as Maryland, based on these same kind of considerations, how should we deal with the fact that there is now insurance of proceeds available in these cases? What those courts have said and what we would ask this court to do is say, balancing those kind of interests, doing the kind of factual study that might be appropriate for that kind of analysis is a task for the legislature, not the judiciary, when it involves that kind of analysis of the impact of statutes in the real world. And I would also submit that another reason that that kind of analysis would best be handled by the legislature is because of the reliance interests that are in place in the insurance industry. Our position is that this is that tort law is not driven by insurance law, but to the extent that the reasoning that the appellant is asking for a carve out to this doctrine is based on the availability of insurance proceeds, it's important to understand that insurance policies are written based on currently existing tort law. The legislature has many more tools available to account for those reliance interests than the court does.
Thank you.
Your Honors, for these reasons, we'd ask that the court affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment and uphold stare decisis principles in affirming the ongoing application of the parental immunity doctrine.
Thank you, Ms. Cano. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 31 seconds.
1 minute and 31 seconds, Mr. McEwen.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. McEwen, I'd like to ask you a question. What is it about the parent-child relationship that you think has significantly changed since 1959?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think the parent-child relationship has changed. I think the trend is with all other courts across the nation is it's not the parent-child relationship that's changed. It's how our nation works as far as insurance proceeds. There's a lot of discussion by the legislature on some of these issues. Deductibles have gone up. I know there was in 2010, they were talking about $2,000 or $3,000 deductibles. Now you're looking at $10,000, $20,000, sometimes $30,000 deductibles on insurance policies. So I think as far as the family strife, those kinds of things, talk about family strife in a situation like this, there's no insurance proceeds to take care of this. When they've been paying premiums, there is access to this. Almost all other jurisdictions have taken a look at that and said, why are we not allowing a child access to those policies where we would let a friend riding in the same vehicle? So I guess that would be my answer to that. I would ask the court to look at EMIG very closely. We've already done this. The court's already done this with spousal immunity. I would also ask the court to take a look at the Iowa case of Turner v. Turner, where the court did exactly what we're asking the court to do here. Thank you.
I beg your pardon.
I have one other question, and that is the legislature, when it chooses to either abrogate a cause of action or to abrogate a defense, has demonstrated that it knows how to do that. You're not suggesting that the legislature doesn't know how to do what you're asking us to do, do you?
No, Your Honor. I'm suggesting the legislature thinks, in my view, the legislature thinks they have already taken care of this. If you look at the floor debate and the discussion they had, there's been no cases since then.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I didn't see anything in the floor debate that talked at all about the parental immunity doctrine. Did I miss something?
You're correct. It doesn't specifically talk about that, but it talks about removing the inability for one spouse to sue the other spouse. But if you look at all that discussion, they bring in family, they bring in children, they bring in the discussion I just mentioned that a child can't recover, but their best friend can. I think I referenced 18 different times in that floor debate where they discussed those terms, family, child, grandchild. So it wasn't limited to simply the spousal situation.
Do you agree with the idea that the legislature is capable of looking at the evolving factors within a family? Maybe moms have more independent means and dads have more independent means available since 1959.
Your Honor, absolutely. I think they can do that. I also think under the decision I talked about earlier, Heckman, if this court were abrogated, the legislature can easily come in and reinstate it or modify it. They can do whatever they want. I believe they've already spoken on this, so I don't think they'll do a darn thing. when they repealed the guest statute, I would submit that they've already spoken on this and they won't do anything. But the bottom line is, if the court repeals this or abolishes it, as they should do and other jurisdictions have done, the legislature can still come back and add something in if they would like under Heckman.
So you're not actually asking us to abolish it. You're asking us to recognize that the legislature already has abolished it itself in these situations, correct?
Well, Your Honor, that's kind of the way I started. I think the appellee is correct in that there was two different venues, two different ways of attacking this or defending on this type of a suit. One was the parental immunity doctrine. The other one was the guest statute. The guest statute's been removed. So I think that part of it's been taken care of. Now the court needs to do the second part. Again, I would ask you to just take a look at the Turner case out of Iowa. They went through this exact same scenario. They had abolished the spousal immunity doctrine. They took that analysis subsequently and did away with the parental immunity doctrine.
Thank you very much, Mr. McEwen. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Doar versus Doar.